You've come to the beginning of another episode of the Kaleidoscope Podcast about everything Youth Initiative High School. Youth Initiative High School is a fiercely independent, multi-generational learning community offering an education that speaks to the whole human being. It was founded in 1996 and operates in Viroqua, Wisconsin, amongst the ridges and coulees of the Driftless region. I'm Matt, school administrator and host.
And I'm Logan, math teacher and podcast producer.
In this episode, we peek our heads over the fence to see what our neighbors at Viroqua High School are up to. We'll chat with YIHS senior Grace Anderson, VHS senior Carson Tracy, and Viroqua Area Schools district administrator Jeremy Hill. Okay, welcome everyone to the Youth Initiative High School Podcast. Today we are very excited to have two special guests and not be at school. We are actually recording for the first time in a foreign environment. But we're hoping it's less foreign as we go along. We are here at the Viroqua Area Schools deep in the bowels of the district office. I'm here with, well, let's just introduce ourselves. I'm here with...
Yeah, I'm Jeremy Hill. I'm the district administrator for Viroqua Area Schools.
Okay. And?
And then I'm Carson Tracy. I'm a senior here at Viroqua High School.
And I'm Grace Anderson, a senior at Youth Initiative.
Yeah, let's just do the human interest part first and just kind of talk about how we all got to be at this table. Maybe not the whole story because we only have a little bit of time, but just how did you arrive in Viroqua? I mean, part of the reason for doing this is, Jeremy, you are a new arrival. So how did you get here?
So I started as district administrator on July 1st. My wife's family is located in La Crosse and Onalaska, and we have a college freshman and a college junior at the University of Wyoming. And my wife and I believe that we should lead by example. And when we tell our kids that they are lifelong learners, we have to be lifelong learners ourselves. And so we emptied a nest and built a new nest all at the same time and moved to Wisconsin to pursue the opportunity to be a school district administrator. My wife is a nonprofit educator. She works for a child development services of Fremont County, still in Wyoming, which is a birth to five school for children with developmental delays. And so she commutes back and forth every month to do that job. And then I'm here feet first in Viroqua.
Okay. And so have you come from Wyoming? Is that you were born and raised in Wyoming?
Born and raised in Wyoming. Spent about 10 years in Texas. That's where I met my wife and where our kids were born. And her family is originally from Texas, but they have migrated here to the Great North and are living and working in the La Crosse area.
So did you grow up on like a ranch?
A farm. Yep.
You did?
Yep.
Like a real Wyoming boy.
Yep. We had more crops than livestock. So
okay.
That'd be the difference between a farm and a ranch from the Western perspective.
That sure.
You're farming crops or ranching livestock. And so I grew up on a production farm. Alfalfa hay and sugar beets and oats.
Yep. Nice.
Oats and barley. Our kids, while we were raising them in Wyoming, Emma started in kindergarten and went all the way through. Jackson started in second grade. He had spent the first 2 years going to school in Texas. And so they showed livestock, showed pigs and lambs. And so just kind of had that micro farm opportunity for our kids.
Cool. Carson, how did you get here?
So in first grade, I moved here from West Dallas in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Because my dad got a good job opportunity in Soldiers Grove. So I've been here since. I took a little bit of a break during COVID to go to a virtual school, but I came back my freshman year and I've been here since then.
So you've gone all the way through first grade to now, basically, except for that 1 year here in the Viroqua School District.
Mostly I did that section of elementary school from first to fourth, and then fifth I went online, then I did sixth through eighth with online school, and then I came back here.
Okay. Which school did you go to online?
I think it was Rural Virtual School.
Okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with that. All right. And so you're pretty much born and raised here. Mm-hmm. Not born, but raised.
Yeah.
Do you remember West Dallas at all?
I have a few, like, very vague memories, but I was pretty young, so not too much.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Are you have any siblings?
Yes, I have two little siblings. I have a little sister who's a freshman, and then my brother who's a sixth grader, and they both go here.
Okay. And you, Grace, somewhat need no introduction, but how did you end up here?
I was born in Portland, Oregon. When I was four, my parents moved to Madison to be closer to family. And I lived in Madison until the age of eight. My parents are both teachers and travelers. And they decided they'd like to give me the opportunity to live overseas. So we moved to Costa Rica, where they both taught at a small private school there, and I learned Spanish. And then we moved to Guatemala to pursue a Waldorf education. And when looking into moving back, we were very drawn to Pleasant Ridge here in Viroqua. And so I went to Pleasant Ridge 5th through 8th grade, and it seemed only natural then to go to Youth Initiative.
And you've been there ever since.
And I've been there ever since, yep.
And you're almost gone.
I'm almost done.
These two seniors, do you got any plans for the future, the ominous future? Or maybe it's not ominous. Maybe it's hopeful and bright. Mm-hmm. Carson, what are you going to do?
I probably will go to UW-Madison. And then I applied to the business school there. If I get in, I'll probably major in risk management and insurance. But if I don't get into the business school there, I'll probably do pre-business in Madison.
Is the business school in Madison pretty competitive, like pretty selective?
I think it's pretty selective, yeah. But we have to go there if I get in, so.
Okay.
Carson, I think you should talk about maybe your history with business education and kind of the courses that you took to get you ready for the trip that you took last summer to represent Viroqua.
So kind of got into business because I was always like pretty interested in math, and I found business as like a really good application of math. So last year I joined FBLA, which is a club here that's Future Business Leaders of America. And then I also took online AP Microeconomics and AP Macroeconomics. And then with those, I ended up going to Nationals in Anaheim for the FBLA National Conference to compete in economics.
How do you compete in economics?
Yeah, they had like an objective test. So I think it was 100 questions and 50 minutes. And then they just score you on that. And then if there was a tie, like they just do whoever had the better time.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's an accomplishment.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we're super proud of Carson and the work that he and Ms. Hubach put in together to get there. And I mean, I think it's always fun to talk to students who have been to national contests. But it's true. You beat out every other kid in Wisconsin that was in that same category to earn the right to go there. Mm-hmm. And I think you need to make sure that UW-Madison knows that. Mm-hmm. And I think that you have worked really hard to set yourself up for that success.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're a shoo-in to me. I mean, what was your category?
Economics.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You got a favorite economist?
It's kind of a loaded question.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
But I'm curious to know what your answer is.
No, not really. It's surprising. They don't really talk much about the history of economics or the different economists.
Okay.
In those courses, they mainly just focus on like the concepts.
You got themselves. A favorite concept?
Kind of like the different devices the Federal Reserve uses.
Yeah.
like to influence the economy in different ways. I find that really interesting.
Monetary policy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something I've never really wrapped my head around completely. I don't really understand it. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad we have young people that can take care of that for us because it's complicated. Grace, what have you got? Any plans? Or?
Yeah, I got big plans. I'm hoping to go to McAllister in the Twin Cities to pursue a major in creative writing and a double major in global international studies. So I'm going to continue with my Spanish. I'm currently taking an interpreting program at Viterbo University to gain my interpreter certificate, which is a career I hope to pursue while in college. Yeah, the goal is to one day work overseas as a reporter. So maybe after I finish my BFA at McAllister, I'll go on to do some sort of journalism program.
I have a friend from high school who is a Mac alum and a similar pathway, I think, you know, for you as far as what she studied. But
yeah,
she is an actress in the Boston area doing some independent film and commercial work too. But I think that global view that she got from McAllister was huge. And the connections that she has with others who graduated in that kind of that same time frame or that are also McAllister graduates. I understand it's kind of like a fraternity when you meet a McAllister grad in the wild.
Right.
That, you know, there's that instant connection just because of that McAllister experience. So I'm excited for you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, growing up in Minnesota, it was McAllister's like, it's the Harvard of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It also happens to be the only school that ever denied admission to me. So as we talk about it, every time
her feelings coming up.
For 20 years, I've had to watch kids apply and get into McAllister. And yeah, it's a good, humbling experience. Do you ever do any creative writing in Spanish? Because you lived in Belize?
Costa Rica and Guatemala
for how many years?
For 1 year in each country.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
During a pretty formative time in your life. I mean, your Spanish is the Spanish of someone who spoke Spanish as a child.
Yes. Yep.
In that, like, it feels natural.
They call it heritage speaker.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you ever do any creative writing in Spanish?
I used to a lot when I was younger because I grew up, you know, reading Alice in Wonderland and Narnia and all the classics, and that's how I fell in love with writing. And so then, when I was living in Central America, I was writing in Spanish because that was like my form of play as a child, was like making stories. But my instinct at that time was to do it in Spanish. And since then that sort of died out a little bit. And the course that I'm in requires writing in Spanish, but it's medical terminology, legal terminology. So not exactly the same track there, but yeah.
But language, academic language that's going to be useful to you as a creative writer when you think about whatever genre you choose to write in. So
absolutely.
I think it's incredible when you consider early immersion dual language type situations. Yeah. My son, when we were still in Texas, Jackson did kindergarten and first grade in a dual immersion program. And my wife is fluent in Spanish and taught the pre-K component of that. And I think that you, when you're such a sponge at that point in time where you can learn that and become that heritage speaker, says so much about what language development does for learners.
Yeah. I mean, it's the way we think.
Yeah.
So it's pretty broadens the horizons. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy, you are, correct me if I'm wrong, a former English teacher.
I was a high school English teacher, taught and coached speech and debate and competitive theater and forensics also in Wyoming and then in Texas prior to becoming an administrator.
So is that how you, I mean, that was one of the questions that we had thinking about today's conversation was just, first of all, what's the difference between a superintendent and a district administrator? Because they used to be the superintendent. And I think the last...
Right. And that's still generally the job, but the state of Wisconsin recognized the district administrator when looking at classes of administration when it comes to public schools in Wisconsin.
Okay.
So the job is basically the same. The title is just very different. And I think they're used interchangeably in conversation, but when you consider the formal declaration, it's district administrator.
Mm-hmm. And what Is this your first time as a superintendent or district administrator?
It is.
It is.
It is. I was an elementary principal for 8 years prior to this. And then I spent 4 years as an athletic director, assistant principal.
Okay.
And then a couple years prior to that, I was an assistant principal in Texas.
And what does your day look like? I mean, what does a district administrator do? We don't have, of course, we're a very small
place. Well, you're the district administrator, right? When you think about the work that you do in overseeing the whole component of how your school functions. And so sure. I focus on the economy side of it, as Carson, you know, would probably be interested in a little bit, what it costs to run a school district our size. Mm-hmm. I consider the people aspect of all of that too. And as an administrator, I'm relationship driven first. I want to make sure that our people are heard and what they have to say is shared further out. I focus my time on board relations and making sure that when members of our community reach out to our school board and have questions about how we do things, then I always am looking for that pathway forward for our community to be successful when it comes to learning and embracing learning. And, you know, not that it's been recorded on air, but you and I have had really great conversations about schools in our community and always creating a pathway forward for kids to be successful. For them to learn online like Carson did and then come back to our school, I think says a lot for Grace when you consider the Waldorf piece and those early formative years for her overseas and then coming back to Pleasant Ridge and then transitioning naturally to Youth Initiative. I think what's incredible when you consider Viroqua is people come here for the opportunity to raise their kids in unique schooling situations. Mm-hmm. And as the big entity in our community, the school district, we have a vested interest in doing everything that we can to provide the best education for all kids in our community and being that partner for schools like Youth Initiative is as your kids are charting that pathway forward.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Yeah.
Well said indeed. In terms of, where do you went to extra schooling then to pick up some of the, I'm also an English teacher. I've learned most of the very little that I know about, you know, fiscal matters and so on and so forth, just by bumbling around, basically, if I'm not going to lie, for 10 years. Mm-hmm. But you had additional education after your teaching.
Sure. So then I got a master's degree from the University of Houston, Victoria, to be a school administrator. And when we transitioned back to Wyoming, and I got my own campus, an elementary campus there, and was officially in charge of a campus and not just an assistant principal, made a decision to go back to school to earn my doctorate to become a school superintendent or a college professor. And so I think, you know, it goes back to that. One of the early things that I said is that lifelong learning is so critical. Mm-hmm. And you have to always think about what those next steps are for you as an economist or as a writer and a activist overseas. I think you always have to think about how is our world changing and what can we do differently mm-hmm. to position ourselves and to position the people that we care for to be the very best that they can be. Mm.
Well, you guys are on the cusp of that change. Like, what do you see in your short lives? What do you see looking into the future and what you've experienced maybe in the last 4 years? Like, where is that change happening? What is changing in your world or that you feel like needs to be tackled or can be leveraged for something?
It's a really broad question. I don't know where to start.
What do you remember from COVID?
I actually think I had a really unique experience in COVID. I mean, with Waldorf schools, you know, the whole class goes up together throughout the whole 8 years. We have the same teacher. And for me during COVID, it was so weird to not see those people every single day. And yet at the same time, there was still that community. We had class online. We had this sort of hybrid class where we were outside doing class and then the rest of the day online. But there was still this like sense of I remember my class organized a like a little parade for my birthday, social distancing and everything. And I was like I, with our generation, I feel like going forward, I think there's a lot of debate, obviously, and conversation about technology and the fact that it's having an effect, absolutely. But I do personally, when I'm looking forward into the future, I'm seeing that there's a lot, that community I felt when we were all separated, is that community is growing. And I think that that's something that I feel when talking to other teenagers, is like, also through the use of social media going forward, there's like a commitment to coming together as humans.
Carson. Yeah, I think one of the big things, I kind of agree, is that technology, especially with just how much more information you come around, and with AI producing tons and tons of more information to add to that, and blurring the line between what's true and what's generated.
Mm-hmm.
I think that as that technology develops, people will definitely need to approach it with an attitude of learning instead of like overconfidence on what they think they already know, or mm-hmm. Things like that.
Yeah.
Matt, did you catch that? He said what's true and what's generated.
Yeah, I did.
You know, I think that we're of a generation where we would say what's true and what's not true.
Right.
But Carson positioned that in a what's true and what's generated, because even if it's generated, it's still true. There's a truth to the generation of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important to remember that you guys have to be savvy going forward to recognize what is true and what is generated, and be deliberate in the relationship building that has to happen. You know, before we sat down and before Logan started recording and we kind of introduced ourselves, you guys talked about knowing each other from soccer.
Mm-hmm.
That was a deliberate decision for your parents to put you in a situation to connect
mm-hmm.
you to each other, even though it was indirect through activities in our community.
Yeah.
And I think that's the important thing. I don't want us to ever lose sight of the fact that whether our kids are in the same school walls or not, there's still an inherent connection between them and our community.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And every time we have an opportunity to build a pathway forward, we should do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I find that, I think also, like, going off of what you said, I think that what people are looking for more than ever is like authenticity, and like whether it comes from like connection or in their studies, like finding things that like brings forth a passion and a motivation. And I think that like that's something that I've loved about being at youth, is I feel like that's brought forth here. And it's also something that I've had the experience of, like, I get to come to Viroqua and go to dances, and like I know people here, and it's like there is that genuine connection even though we're in different spots. And I think that, like, yeah, I think that that's what people are really looking for right now.
Agreed. I mean, and you're saying that you think it's possible to do that through technology, because I mean that's what I see certainly as an older person, like the biggest changes. I mean, I've been teaching high school for long enough to, certainly not before the internet, although I went to college before the internet, and but was a teacher certainly when there weren't, the iPhone was not there, and it was a much different experience.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone as my age, has been sort of disorienting to watch young people adopt these things, and yeah, definitely some dark moments. But you think possible to do that through or with social media as an ally instead of an enemy to authenticity and direct connection?
I think that's really possible, actually. During that period that I was in online school,
right.
We lived like way far in the country, so I don't think I left the house for like a long, long time. Maybe occasionally in those 3 years I'd go to Walmart or something, but I got a lot of that socialization through online sources, and it wasn't like fake. Those are real people, and it did feel authentic, even though it was virtual.
Mm-hmm.
Like whether it was through social media or games or through the virtual school or virtual events or meetings they had. But those provided like that authentic sense of connection. So I do think that's very possible.
Yeah. I think it also depends on like what intention you have going into it. Like if you're seeking a connection to be found on the internet, it depends, like, you know, something I just thought of too is like the way that you, when watching a football game and you're seeing the fans on the screen and you're feeling the way that you know those fans are feeling, it's like, isn't that a relatively authentic connection too? But you're experiencing it virtually. And then if you were to meet, who does Josh Allen play for? The Bills?
The Bills.
If you were to meet a Bills fan and be like, oh my gosh, that game, he'd probably be like, yeah, that game, and then there you go. But that you didn't know this guy until you saw him at the supermarket.
Right, right. Well, and you don't ever know if you're watching a football game, and we're all watching it remotely unless you're in that stadium.
Right.
If you're in the stadium, you've shared that experience together. But if you're watching it, you never know when somebody comes into that experience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Like they started watching in the fourth quarter, or they just watched it all through highlights. But you're right. You're making a deliberate choice to authentically connect to something.
Yeah.
Even though it's not a live moment. And I think that this technological world that we live in now, where there are so many podcasts or broadcasts or any other type of media release that happens in every given moment, there's no way for us to take it all in.
Yeah.
There was a time period in our country where you could take it all in if you were sitting in front of the radio all day long or
right.
in front of the TV and
watching Matt and Walter Cronkite.
Right. And or getting up and we were the remote control, just in case you guys wondered. Yeah. We were the remote control back in the day when our parents would tell us to get up and change the channel. but, you know, you could take
Terrible.
In.
Inhumane.
You could take in. It was completely inhumane. But we're here to live to talk about it today. But you could take more of it in at that point in time. And now you have to really be a consumer who discerns the source to make sure that that source is authentic.
Mm-hmm.
But you can find a source that will say anything you want it to say.
Absolutely.
And you have to be good consumers of that. And I'm proud of these two because I think that our school systems have created discerning consumers in these two for sure.
Yeah, I think so. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did the Wisconsin legislature, they recently made some action on school cell phones in schools?
So they have said that students need to be off cell phones during instructional time. Mm. And our board has, for a long time, prior to me, for sure, so I guess it maybe not that long, but has said that cell phones should be off during instructional time. So the policies that we already had in place aligned with what the legislature said needed to be in place.
I had heard that it was something like schools were banned from campuses, and I thought,
some
wow.
are, you know, some are interpreting that rule very differently. We have an active Board of Education for Viroqua Area Schools that is forward thinking and that has taken the time to consider how we would use technology and how students would use handheld technology specifically. And so it has always been, and Carson can probably speak to that in classes where teachers' expectation is that you are not using that device in a way that is not for educational purposes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I definitely think that's true. Like, especially with some of the more advanced classes here, like teachers, they won't even say anything if you pull out your phone and do something because they assume that you're still paying attention to the material. And that's kind of an expectation they have, that people aren't just using their phones as a distraction and as a tool if they do pull it out during that class time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess in the end, you can't cheat yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can, I guess, but that's who you're cheating.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so I think that as a teacher, then you want to involve that student. When you notice that student is doing that,
right,
that's when you turn to them and say, what did you find? Share with us.
Yeah.
What did you find?
Yeah.
And if they're not using it for instructional purposes, they're going to quietly, slightly put it in their pocket and rejoin and re-engage in the conversation. But if they are using it to better their learning, that's a perfect opportunity for us to include them, to draw them back in, and to
to have those authentic interactions with their classmates.
Mm-hmm. What does the future hold for you, Jeremy Hill?
Well, I think I don't know that I'm the best person in this room to ask that question to. I think for me, the focus is continuing to do whatever we can to provide opportunities for families in our community to educate their students. And, you know, when you consider the recent realization or discovery that students who homeschool or students who go to private schools in our community have the opportunity to take up to 2 classes here in our school. Mm-hmm. So I hope what the future holds for me is opportunities to continue to collaborate with our educational partners in the mm-hmm. community, because that is how we will grow. I saw an interesting study last week that in 2004, 88% of students in our country went to public schools. Mm. That number is currently down to 80% in 2024. So it was an 8% drop from 2004 to 2024. But it is estimated by 2030 to only be 50%. 50% of students would go to public schools.
Wow.
17% would be in private schools, and close to 30% or right below a third of students nationwide would be homeschooling. And I think it's interesting when you consider that if that's the case and if that's the trend, what are we doing as a public school to provide as many accessible opportunities for families in our community to educate their kids to the highest level that they believe is possible for their child?
Mm-hmm.
That is our duty. That is what the future holds for me.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's kind of a shocking statistic.
Mm-hmm. I was floored by that.
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of homeschoolers that roll in around 9th or 10th grade. And yeah, I mean, it seems like a pretty wonderful experience that they have. I mean, they bring a different flavor and enthusiasm that not just for intellectual learning, but for social learning, mm-hmm. you know, that they're very excited to engage in that way.
Well, and what did we do during COVID? I think back as an educator to March of 2020, and we anticipated the shutdown coming, and we started reaching out to families and we said, you're going to have to educate your kids at home. We're going to help you, mm-hmm. but you're going to have to educate your kids at home.
Mm-hmm.
And families said to us, no.
Panic.
We can't.
Yeah.
We can't do that. How can we possibly do that? And we, with the best of intentions, said, you can. You've got this. We're here for you. We're going to partner with you through this. Lo and behold, we come out the other side of it, and families are saying, I got this.
Right.
We can do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We can navigate that. And I think that was probably an unintended consequence,
right,
for public schools, especially to say, families, we're going to empower you to do this from the comfort of your own home. But I think that we have to actually see that as empowering and not as crippling to public schools. Now public schools have to step up and say, okay, here's why those authentic connections with students, and I think private schools to that same extent, those critical connections between human learners is so important. And we have to rethink the way that we approach public schooling and private schooling to make sure that we are looking at those opportunities to collaborate and be together when we can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great vision. I mean, it just seems, you know, what we're talking about here with the technology and these statistics that you're showing, you know, that the sort of cultural chaos almost looming, you know, like what will hold us all together, mm-hmm. if we're not having the same school experience, we're not even watching the same, you know, primetime television program, mm-hmm. like what is it that's going to hold us together as a society?
Mm-hmm.
You got any thoughts on that, Carson? Like what is it that you think that will be able, yeah, what's common to all people?
Well, I think that when you do provide a lot more pathways and different opportunities, that's even more of an opportunity to use a technology and like the internet to find people who do have those same interests as you. So I think it just kind of gives even more power to that tool, and maybe that's a way to integrate that technology in the future.
Mm-hmm. I think, I mean, what unites a society? I mean, my first thought I had was like feeling. And I mean, if I would have been able to take a class at Viroqua when I was a freshman, I would have, I mean, when I heard that that was possible, I was so excited. I've been telling all my friends in grades below, like, take that opportunity. And like, you got to do what makes you feel inspired. And I think that obviously some people have a big aversion to school, but I think that some, like for a lot of people, that's where learning can come in and bring forth, you know, ideas and creativity and like sort of a purpose. And so I think, yeah, I guess that'd be my answer, is like you gotta find what feels right for you. And I think that schools are there to help you find that.
Yeah, man, I think we're here trying to answer that question in microcosm. You know, if we're in a place where you can go to this school, or you can, you know, experience this thing on the internet that you're really into, like, what is it that's gonna hold us? Where are we pointed in the same direction that we can all kind of feel like we're part of a unit?
Well, I think there's a generational piece with that too, right? It's amazing how quickly our world has changed, and that it used to be you would go to school, you would determine toward the end of high school what you wanted to be when you grew up. Mm-hmm. You'd mm-hmm. go to college, or you'd go to trade school, or you'd go straight into the workforce and learn on the job. But you focused on a career that took you the next 20, 30, 40 years to retirement, mm-hmm. and that's what you did. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the high school senior sitting across the table from you and I, Matt, probably don't think in that same concept. You know, they're considering what the first step is, not even always thinking about what the next step is or the step after. I mean, those are important to you guys, but certainly right now you're focused on the next step and the hope that step opens up to you, the opportunity that step opens up to you,
right?
The bigger picture of what that step opens up to you. And I think we have to embrace that as educators. We have to understand that they're not always considering a 45-year career prior to retirement. And certainly some of them will have that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the economist will say, okay, what do I have to do to make sure that I can retire at a certain age and set forth all of my finances to make sure that does that. And the creative writer is going to say, but how incredible could the journey be to get there? Mm-hmm. And you know, when you think about all of those pieces, the opportunities are endless for our students.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they don't have an end goal in mind necessarily, and there has to be some lifelong learning beauty in that too.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what we might be perceiving as or fearing is chaos, maybe really is just flexibility and freedom.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think we're going to cut it short now. Thank you guys for coming in. Actually, we came here, so thank you for having us.
We were so glad to do that.
It's been a real pleasure. Mm-hmm. Carson, wish you luck.
Thank you.
Jeremy, I'll see you again.
Yeah.
Yep. And Grace, I'll see you in about 30 minutes.
Yep.
Okay.
What an opportunity for us to get to spend some time with you guys today too, and learn from you as well. And so thank you for that opportunity, that invitation for us to come in. I'm certainly incredibly proud as an educator of the two of you, and knowing that our future is indeed bright.
Likewise.
Thank you.
All right. Good evening.